Hello, everyone, and welcome to Just DAO It, the podcast for people starting DAOs. I'm Adam Miller, and I'm your host. Prior to starting MyDAO, I did consulting for people starting and operating DAOs. And now as the CEO of MyDAO, I help write laws, create legal entities that are made for DAOs and Web3 in the Marshall Islands. We are recording live as usual, so apologies in advance for any hiccups, and we'll be posting to our podcast feed later today. Also, as usual, the first half of the show will be the Just DAO It News Report, where our guest Isaac and I will dig into recent DAO news, what the stories mean for people starting DAOs, what we agree or disagree with, any other hot takes, and in the second half, we will dig deeper into an interview with Isaac. But first, Isaac, would you please give a brief introduction to yourself and what makes you an authority on DAOs?
Great. Yeah, sure. So my name is Isaac Valdez. I'm venture lead at Cone State. Cone State is a venture studio focused on the ICP ecosystem. You can kind of think of us almost like the consensus of the ICP. And I've been involved in governance for the DAO that runs the ICP protocol. For over 3 years now, I've been involved as a known neuron. So I'm kind of like a delegate, I think they call it on other types of DAOs, where I vote and people can choose to follow my votes. And I was one of the earliest delegates there. And as venture lead, basically, I get to start companies for a living. One of the companies I'm currently running is a auditing agency. We just got hired by a DAO. So like I work as a vendor to DAOs. I help advise people who are starting DAOs within our ecosystem. And right now we're also about to launch our own DAO with an event coming up on May 10th. In fact, Adam's gonna be featured on this big global live stream that we're gonna have. We're gonna be decentralizing the event series itself live. It'll be a Marshall Islands DAO LLC, lots of exciting things there. And so that's a little bit about me.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, I think one of the really cool things about what we get to talk about today is digging a little bit into the ICP ecosystem, because there's been so much progress made there recently. And I know lots of DAOs being started there, which, by the way, I think is a great kind of signal. If someone wants to try to figure out what blockchain ecosystems are alive and healthy, is look at how many DAOs are being started. That does seem to be kind of a forward indicator of like there's something real happening here, because if there wasn't a real developer community, builder community, if they weren't actually doing stuff and trying to solve real problems, you wouldn't need 20 new DAOs, you know, in the first quarter of this year or whatever it is. So it's really exciting to have you on the show.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I'm excited to be here. Let's dig in.
All right, let's do it. So first part of the show, as always, the Just DAO It News Report. Again, I will summarize each of these stories for the audience and for you, Isaac, and then we will dig into the stories in terms of what we think about them. So the first story of the week is from The Defiant, and the headline is Sushi Team Under Fire for Proposed Treasury Takeover. Sushi's head chef said the proposal seeks to safeguard treasury assets from an ongoing governance attack. All right, I'm going to read a few quotes from the article. First, Sushi's long-running governance saga appears to be coming to a head, with its controversial core operations team hastily moving to push through a governance proposal that would transfer the project's treasury into the hands of a centralized Sushi Labs team. Controversially, the proposal requests that Sushi DAO transfer 25 million Sushi, worth about $40 million, $7 million worth of Arbitrum tokens, and $9 million in other treasury assets to the new Labs team. It added that Sushi Labs would become the sole beneficiary of future airdrops awarded to Sushi by protocols and partners. All right, well, let me just stop here and just comment on a couple things. I mean, first of all, you know, I posted a Farcaster the other day about this story and said, drama at Sushi. And I think the common reply was, again, or of course, or yes, continued. So apparently there's a bit of a history here of some drama in this DAO. I know when they hired a quote unquote head chef, some people said, what, a head chef? That sounds like a CEO, and DAOs don't have CEOs. And I don't necessarily agree with that. I think it's okay if a DAO wants to have a CEO. Maybe the more important kind of thing to dig into here is, you know, a lot of ecosystems have multiple entities. You might have the DAO, and maybe there's a legal entity for the DAO, but then you also have like the LabCo. So in this case, it's Sushi Labs, and that is a separate entity. And it's certainly meaningful for the people involved in the LabCo to propose to the DAO, hey, send us all the money. And by the way, we're going to take all the money in the future. That does sound pretty meaningful. One of the things I wonder about is a supposed governance attack. Is there really a governance attack? Or especially just given there's been a history of accusations in sushi? Is it more likely that that's just like a PR line that the head chef is using to try to get people to vote for this thing? Now, on the flip side, it's a proposal. Like, they are going through the DAO's governance mechanism to propose that this happen. And if the token holders want to vote against it, they can vote against it. Now, apparently, there's one more thing I'll go into, which is, I guess, the supposed, I should say that allegedly, the people behind this proposal took a bit of a creative approach in terms of how they proposed it, which is they added a bunch of liquidity to the sushi liquidity, a certain liquidity pool, which gives them more voting rights. Launched the proposal on Snapshot, which has a snapshot feature where it takes a snapshot of voting rates at that moment, quickly pulled their liquidity back out of the pool because they didn't even have to leave it there. And now in this proposal's vote, they're going to have extra voting power by virtue of adding liquidity and taking it out. And again, this is decentralized. Anyone could have done this. It doesn't seem to necessarily be against the rules of the DAO. So lots going on here. Curious, Isaac, what your take is on this whole story.
I mean, it's an absolute shame, and it reminds me of, in my past, I had a business partner, and you know, he wanted me to have ownership when I was making sacrifices to help grow the business, and when we were first starting off, and then when we got to the point where the business was successful and I was about to start to get owner equity rewards, he decided, and he didn't want me to be an owner after all, right? And he there's this whole thing like when there's a lot of money in the line, things get serious and you can have kind of betrayals. And like they wanted to call themselves a DAO because it was convenient and it attracted users, but they're taking the teeth away from the DAO. They're taking the treasury away from the DAO. And like, what's the DAO there for, basically, if they're going to be able to control all of the funds and really do whatever they want? It does feel like I'm kind of siding with the community on this, like that this is really fishy. A lot of people say that they're doing something to protect, right? Like, there's somebody going to take over the governance, so let's take over the governance, right? Like doesn't really make sense to me. And I think that, you know, part of the problem is like the treasury, first off, it's always in crypto, it's about who has the keys. So to my understanding, to my knowledge of the situation, the treasury, technically, they have the keys and they pull the levers and they're just under contract to do what the snapshot says. But then also reading in that article that you shared, they were taking down proposals from their opponents. So their opponents were making proposals, and they, because they control the Snapshot account and their admins on the Snapshot off-chain account, they were taking down those proposals, and that's not really playing fair, right? Like you're under contract to agree to do certain things, but you also hold the keys and you game the system. And I mean, yes, maybe they had the right to add liquidity because anybody could have that right, but this really seems like they aren't trying to be fair partners with the community. I think it's like a business partnership, and they're wanting to be like, well, not really. You don't really have this power after all. Or we don't really want to leave it up to the community. Because let's be honest, if all was fair and it was truly just absolutely decentralized, this so-called governance attack should be able to succeed. It's called capitalism, right? Like, you know, honestly, the people that they're accusing of attacking it sound like they might be more decentralized than the actual core team that's trying to protect everyone. So I don't know. That's just my opinion. Well, I don't get involved in SushiSwap very much. I use them a little bit, but maybe others know more than me on the topic.
Well, and I think, you know, you highlight something really important that we've talked about a lot on this show over the past couple of years, which is like, is a DAO really a DAO if there's a multisig, or if there's an admin of the snapshot, or if there is someone who has signed a contract saying, I promise I will do what the DAO tells me to do, that actually controls the money? And I'm not actually going to say it's necessarily not a DAO, but I think it's really important that people know what they are getting into when they get involved in a protocol or a DAO or a treasury project, whatever you want to call it, that people are transparent about how things really work and that you know what you're getting into. And so, I mean, this ties back to something we deal with a lot at my DAO, which is, you know, one of the competing jurisdictions is the Cayman Islands, where in the Cayman Islands, there's always a director or more than one director who is actually in charge of the DAO's legal entity and signs a contract saying, I promise I will do what the DAO tells me, but they don't have to. And like, it almost defeats the purpose of actually being a DAO and doing things on chain. And so I'll be really, I mean, at the same time, it's hard to know. Like as an investor, thought about buying like sushi tokens to like support the sushi protocol and like be a part of that journey, I might not have had the time to do the research to figure out that, well, is it really a DAO or is it just like a multi-sig with some promises? And so I think it's hard for people to figure that out.
Yeah, no, it can be tough. And I guess I take it to, maybe this is a bit of extreme, but like it should be, like the DAO should have enough teeth such that something could go wrong, that there could possibly be a takeover or like that there is some risk on the line, because like any business partner has certain types of risk. But if there's somebody who's providing a safety net, that's usually a sign that that safety net has too much power in and of itself. And that's going to be probably the most likely exploit path. But yeah.
Yep. Yeah. All right. Next article of the week. This one is from CoinDesk. And the headline is, DAOs beware, neo-imperialism is on the rise in crypto land. Wyoming's new legal entities for decentralized, unincorporated nonprofit associations sets up legal entities that cheapens the idea of creating protocols that work independent of nation states, Martin Schmidt writes. This is also an opinion piece, which I'm glad to see because I disagree with the opinion mostly. I mean, first of all, okay, well, let's just get a little bit into the story. So what's happening here is there's this new type of legal entity created by a law passed recently in Wyoming that was supported by a man named Miles Jennings, who works for Andreessen Horowitz. He's like their chief legal counsel or something like that. And by Andreessen Horowitz, or sorry, what's called A16Z now, by their account, they intend to make DUNAs the industry standard for blockchain networks. Now, okay, that doesn't sound so bad, even if it's a competitor to what I do. But the next thing A16 said was they intend to make the adoption of the DUNA structure a condition of investment. And so the author of this article says, in other words, if good arguments do not convince DAO operators, probably the threat of withdrawing funding opportunities will. And this starts to feel to the author of the article like a form of imperialism. Now, I have to just say, I think comparing like a venture capital firm trying to force people to do things to make more money is very different from actual imperialism. So I don't necessarily love just the drama in the title. But I think the author makes a good point, which is he goes on to say, the choice of legal structure should follow an analysis of what it is that you want to achieve. By prescribing a specific legal entity type before a sound analysis of the requirements of a project, you are putting the cart before a horse. A DUNA may or may not solve project team's issues, and there are many other alternatives that might be better depending on the facts and circumstances of the case at hand. And interestingly, and the author says, maybe the most surprising argument that the authors make of the law is that DUNAs are great because they empower the DAO to pay taxes in the United States. And I, this was also something that was surprising to me when I heard that it was called a unincorporated nonprofit association. And then I heard the author say in a talk recently, this way you can pay your taxes. It's like, wait a second, I thought nonprofits were supposed to be tax-free. And of course, in the United States, that's not always the case. And so I think there are circumstances where a DAO, a project, a protocol might say, you know what? Like, let's say, for example, because of the nature of the project, the founders, where the users are, we're going to have to do everything in the United States anyways. We're going to have to follow their laws. We're going to have to register with SEC. We're going to have to pay our taxes. So we might as well just file a legal entity in the United States that just like acquiesces to all of that. Sure. But I think in my experience, a lot of crypto projects are truly global in nature, and they are trying to avoid having to necessarily follow every single US-based rule if they can help it. So what do you think, Isaac?
Yeah, I mean, I don't really like it. Like the fact that they say that they only want to invest in projects that have the DUNA structure, I feel like that's limiting, but it's also like, it's not my money, it's their money. Like I'm kind of a capitalist in that sense of like, if I don't want people telling me what to do with my money, then that doesn't really give me the right to tell them what to do with their money as a VC. I think that it, most likely it's them trying to build a narrative to push something that they feel like can be a benefit for them. But I'm curious as to what to see whether they're really going to stick to that rule, because let's be honest, like it doesn't matter if even their money is on the line. I think that there's so much liability with being tied to the US that a lot of projects just aren't going to do that. Like they might just say no, and then their VC fund is missing out on opportunity. And, you know, they're probably not really going to do that. I think they're trying to build a really positive narrative around a DUNA because they want to see it progress, but whether they actually abide by that rule of you will not get our investments no matter what unless you have a structure, let's see if that really what they do, right? Because yeah, there's just a lot of stuff coming out, and I think one of the news articles you're going to mention even of how unfriendly the states are to crypto, which is unfortunate because I'm an American, I'm in Texas, and you know, I hate to see our country being such a bottleneck for innovation in this whole industry.
Yep. All right, next article. This one is from the Dow Times, and the headline is, Vanna launches Reddit Data DAO, enabling users to control and monetize their data. So I think a simpler and nice story here. So the idea is that this DAO is saying, okay, Reddit users, download your data from Reddit, upload it to our protocol that's controlled by this DAO, or keep it on a node, maybe in a somewhat private way, and we will use it to train AI models that can leverage that data. And this way, instead of Reddit making all the money, because recently it's been in the news that Reddit is, for example, getting paid by, I think, Google so far, $1 billion or something a year to, or maybe, oh, actually, maybe it was just $100 million to, so that Google's AI models can train on Reddit's data. And so this DAO is saying, why not have the users take their data and monetize it? Now, I have to wonder, and the article doesn't go into this, unfortunately, I thought that the terms of use of most of these services like Reddit are that you don't own your data. And that's kind of the point of why we need Web3 going forward, is that we've gotten locked into these networks like Reddit, where I don't think you're allowed to take your data and go monetize it a different way. But I don't have all the details on that.
Yeah, yeah, I thought this was really cool. I mean, I love to see initiatives like this. I'm not sure about the business model. Like, I hope the business model works out, and that there's something to it. My first thought though was, it's great. So now we're going to have bots that are like really, really good. What do you call it? Reddit trolls. We're going to train a bunch of AI bots to become the perfect Reddit trolls. But you know, it's cool to see. Like you said, like these platforms don't have to make these partnerships available. They don't have to make your data available to you. And it's cool to see that, I guess, like the social aspect, or the movement of the ethos of Web3 and giving people members their control. You're right. Like, it's a Web3 thing, but it doesn't necessarily have to always happen on Web3. So it's cool to see a platform kind of being open to adopting that. Which Reddit always seemed to me to be one of the more chill platforms where, they kind of respect their users a bit more so than other platforms and yep. Give them more reins.
Cool. All right. Next article of the week. This one is from crypto.news. And the headline is, SEC serves Wells notice to Uniswap. DeFi exchange Uniswap has received a warning of an impending enforcement action enacted by the United States SEC. All right. Excuse me. So, first of all, it's a good article. This article also has an embedded tweet from Hayden Z. Adams, who is a founder of Uniswap, which also it goes into a bit more detail. And then embedded in that tweet is a tweet or post from the legal counsel of Uniswap, which then goes into even more detail about kind of the legal perspective here. And so maybe worth checking all this stuff out. The lawyer's name is Amori, or Marvin Amori. What's going on here is the SEC has apparently informed Uniswap that it will be coming after them as a unregistered securities exchange, which is to say, this is not about the UNI token per se. This is about Uniswap, the protocol, allowing people to trade other tokens on the protocol. And the SEC is saying, well, because those are securities, you would have to register as a securities exchange to let people trade those tokens. I think there's a nice quote here from an article on the Uniswap website from their blog. It goes as follows. Despite SEC rhetoric that most tokens are securities, the reality is that tokens are a digital file format, like a PDF or spreadsheet, and can store many kinds of value. They are not intrinsically securities, just as every sheet of paper is not a stock certificate. We are confident that the products we offer are not just legal, they are transformative. So I think, like, first of all, whether or not the products are transformative, unfortunately, it does not have any bearing on whether they're legal or not. But certainly it's unfortunate that our government seems to be treating this incredibly transformative technology as mostly illegal. So this is going to be potentially another landmark case, like the cases against Coinbase, which is very similar, right? The SEC has alleged, among other things, that Coinbase is an unregistered securities exchange or broker because the tokens traded there are securities. And so what's nice to see here is that I think Uniswap is prepared to fight on behalf of not just themselves, but the entire crypto industry, that they're going to fight on first principles, not just protect themselves from whatever financial damage. And they're going to say, which I think this analysis is interesting too. I mean, technically it's true that a token, it's just a list of of two numbers. The first column is the number is the wallet address, and the second is the number is how many or how much of the token. And so it's basically like a super dumbed down Excel spreadsheet that lives on the distributed ledger. And so, it is a little crazy to think that someone might say that's always a security. At the same time, let's be honest, like in crypto, we've wanted to kind of convince the world that tokens are a real thing. It's not just a spreadsheet, but that they are things of value and that you can trade them and hold them and own them and all this stuff. So I don't think we will necessarily win by arguing that it's just like a piece of paper. But I think in the middle is going to be a really important fight, and one that I think and hope that Uniswap will win. What do you think, Isaac?
I'm actually kind of bullish on this whole scenario. I'm not sure. I almost, like hearing about this, I'm almost wondering whether the SEC is doing this on purpose to maybe I'm a conspiracy theorist, whatever, but it just seems like a not smart move, right? Because like they've got to protect their jurisdiction. If they lose a court case, they, it kind of sets precedent for what they don't have power over, right? So like it's a big risk for the SEC to do these court cases. So the smart thing would be, all right, I'm a regulator. I can tell everybody what the rules are and then hold them accountable to those rules. But instead of adding that legal clarity that everybody's been asking for and all the good actors are trying to do, they go after these people, these good actors, these clearly, out in the open, working, well-established good actors with lots of funding. How do you win a case when you haven't defined what they could have done wrong? That's the problem they've been running into with Ripple. And with others, it's like these guys, like, look, how do we follow the rules if you don't tell us what they are, right? And it's almost is this happening on purpose? Is like this, because this is kind of bullish for crypto at the end of the day. Like at a certain point, I think we're gonna all be to the point where like these brands continue, and we're like, oh, another wealth notice was noticed. Whatever, nothing happens when it happens. Yeah. It's diminishing their own power. And I'm like, are they doing this on purpose or are they just incompetent? Like, I don't know. I'm really disappointed in U.S. regulators, because, well, like I said, I'm an American, and it's just a pity to see America, not embracing this innovation for what it is.
Yeah, right. And I think it's right. It's a pity to see how the SEC is acting, but it's also been nice to see courts generally coming out in favor of crypto so far in these court cases against the SEC, or where the SEC is bringing suits, and even in some cases severely reprimanding the SEC for literally lying in these court cases about facts. It's pretty remarkable. It'll be interesting to see what happens here. All right, the next story of the week. This one is from dlnews.com, and the headline is Optimism DAO delegates now get accountability scores, but not everyone thinks it's fair. Excuse me. Optimism GovScore wants to hold delegates accountable by giving them point scores based on their on-chain activity. While most delegates applaud the effort, some are more critical. Many delegates said Optimism GovScore should also include off-chain activities. All right, so this is an interesting one. I think Optimism is an example of one of maybe dozens of, if not hundreds of DAOs now that have reached sufficient scale and scope that it's like really, really, really important that they figure out how to govern properly. I guess it's important for all DAOs, but I think what we've seen over the past few years is some of these DAOs, they've been through the ringer a few times now. The people who are founding them, the people who are governing them have been a part of many DAOs. They've learned a lot of lessons. They're really trying to get it right. And so a lot of interesting things come out of DAOs like Optimism DAO. They do a lot of research on governance. And this new idea is related to delegates. So in case anyone doesn't know, the concept of a delegate, it's kind of like an elected representative. It is kind of like an elected representative. Often what you do is you take your tokens, let's say you have 1,000 OP tokens, and you delegate the voting power of your 1,000 tokens to a particular person or multi-sig or organization or whatever it is, and now that person can vote for you. I think what makes this more compelling than elected representatives is the fluidity, that any delegate can have any number of tokens delegated to them. You can have any number of delegates. Those tokens can be revoked, I think, at any time. I guess you could build in a delay. But then what happens is you still run into the challenge in a lot of DAOs where, okay, well, so the most popular person gets the most votes, most tokens delegated to them, or the person who's most active in Discord, or the biggest whale who's already has a lot of voting power. So you run into these like social coordination challenges associated with having delegates. And so how do you overcome the challenge of basically trying to ensure that the delegates are high quality? So I think it's a really good idea to try to introduce some kind of system to evaluate the efficacy of delegates. In this case, the system appears to look at things like how transparent are people about their votes? Do they explain why they voted the way they did? How consistent are they in voting? So it's really basic stuff. And I think it probably does make sense. I think it's an interesting idea that you should include off-chain activities. On one hand, I think some ecosystems really try to value anonymity and the ability to just be, judged for your on-chain activity. At the same time, certainly sounds like it could be relevant if maybe you're willing to KYC and tell the world who you are. Now your reputation is at stake, or you're willing to share your LinkedIn profile and you have 30 years of experience doing really interesting stuff. No reason that shouldn't be relevant too. So a lot of good ideas here. What do you think, Isaac?
Yeah, I think it's good actually. And my understanding is that the GovScore is kind of a separate entity that's just letting like assigning scores to the delegates. And I think like if people don't like the scores that they're assigning, why don't they just make a competitor to it that has an algorithm that they like more? And that's even better because like just like in real world, we have multiple credit scores on whether institutions want to lend us money. Why can't you have multiple scores on you as a delegate that anybody can use their own judgment, prefer whatever mechanism they prefer. We call it the whole delegate system you're describing. We call it liquid democracy, which I think is a good term for because it's just liquid democracy. I think it's good that the GovScore came out with it. We actually had something in ICP recently launched that does. They don't quite have scores, but it's like history tracking, so it's very similar to the same type of thing. But I think that like the idea would be it'd be even better if there was at least another competitor to that score, right? So that you've got multiple checks and balances within the things that weigh the checks and balances. And the biggest criticism on this one was how they lower someone's score if they have too many followers, if they hold too much power. And that was the biggest criticism. And I actually like that, but maybe somebody makes an alternative where that's not part of the score. And I would choose to follow this one because I think that's important. But somebody else might choose to follow the other one, right? This is freedom. The Web3 was created to instill.
Yeah, and it's a great comparison to liken it to credit scores and the difference between the Web 2 model and the Web 3 model, where in Web 2, there are literally two credit scoring agencies, and maybe one day there will be three, maybe one day there will be only one. I think in some countries there are only one, and it's virtually impossible to break into that network and provide a competitive score. But in Web 3, it's virtually free. There's almost no friction to create a new alternative. And so, I even think about things like, historically, look at licensing for, I could say doctors, but let's just say barbers for a minute, like hairstylists, right? Still to this day, to be allowed to cut someone's hair, you have to get a license from the state. There's one body that's allowed to give you that license, and it's different everywhere. And if you don't have it, you could go to jail for cutting people's hair. And I think in a world where there was literally no alternative to just having any way to know whether someone could cut hair well or not without cutting your skin. Like maybe that was necessary, but in a world where it is so, you don't even need Web 3 for this. You could have done this with Web 2, just use Yelp, right? Like once someone chops someone's scalp off, like don't go to that like hairstylist again. But even with Yelp, I guess the problem is there's no identity. There's no trustless system where you can actually make sure you're reviewing the right person and that the person you're actually going to is the person they say they are, right? They could say, well, that's my profile on Yelp, but it turns out they're lying. Now with Web3, you could go to the barber. The barber could sign a message with their wallet when you arrive, proving that they own a profile on the blockchain. And that profile shows that they've been accredited by three different barber licensing agencies in Web3, and they have all good reviews. And so now there's an alternative for the first time in history to kind of central licensing. So whether it's credit scores or governance scores or something else, I think that is really huge.
Yeah, you're right. And it's to start with on-chain things like delegates for DAOs. I think it's a good use case for it.
Yeah. All right. The last article of the week. This is from Cointelegraph. And the headline is, Assange DAO's crypto activities are suspicious. Analysts urge caution. Slow Mist urges transparent DAO operations amid recent transfers, sparking questions about fund destinations. So first of all, if anyone doesn't know, Assange DAO was initially a fundraising campaign to raise money to support Julian Assange, who is the one who I think had the WikiLeaks leaked a bunch of confidential information of the United States. And pretty quickly, people came out in support of him. What's crazy about this story to me is not just that there's not a lot of transparency in this DAO. Apparently, there's like no transparency. I don't even know if it's a DAO. I honestly have no idea. And like, I didn't have time to like dig into this a lot. I would love to see a really deep, like a journalistic investigation into this. But Assange DAO was a Juicebox campaign. And by the way, I love Juicebox. Juicebox is a really easy way for people to raise money on Ethereum, probably on layer twos now as well, into a treasury that could be controlled by either a person or a multi-sig or a DAO, but you don't necessarily know, right? And you'd want to do your research and figure out what the answer is. And what's remarkable to me about this Cointelegraph article, and these are the journalists, I'd like to see them do more research, but is they say that the Assange DAO intends to use the funds to bid on a one-of-one non-fungible token that's by an artist who's in collaboration with Assange. First of all, intends, it's been like 2 years. Like, and Assange is hiding out or in jail or something. How has this money not actually been spent yet to support the guy? And it just seems so unclear. Who's in charge of the money? Where is the money actually going? Is it going to actually benefit Assange? And I think which is what's sad about this is that we have solutions to this now. Like, we have true on-chain DAOs that are completely transparent, that have, like, what you could use something like GovScore to evaluate the people controlling the DAO to make sure the money's actually going to go to the intended use. And this thing raised $50 million, which may now be worth hundreds of millions of dollars. And the money's moving and no one even knows where it's going. As far as people know, it's a rug pull in process. So kind of a little disappointing for me to see the what's going on here.
Yeah. I mean, like, at the end of the day, it comes down to who has the keys, right? Like, does anybody know who has the keys, who has the control to move these funds? And if you don't have the keys, or you don't know what has the keys and don't have proof of that, then it kind of starts to defeat the core of what Web3 is for. Because like, the whole point of Web3 is that in Web2, there's always an admin. There's always an admin with God powers that can go into a database and delete whatever he wants, see whatever he wants, do whatever he wants, you know. And so we tried to build this new internet where people can collectively have control and ownership, and you can't have those admins with God powers, right? That are just single solo interested actors. But then, you know, like, if you have a DAO like this where there's no transparency and you don't even know who has the keys and money's just mysteriously happening to go out with no notifications as to why or where or what, I mean, really, is that anything different than just pitting your money into a random website on Web2 where you don't know who's going to control it once it goes out? I mean, it's honestly, like, it just seems like a more convenient way to scam on Web3 because the tokens are a little bit more liquid than having to have a bank account. This is unfortunate to see, for sure.
Yep. So I think that's, I mean, one of the lessons of our conversation today is, like, you cannot just look at something that calls itself a DAO and assume that it really is, and that it really is safe and decentralized and trustworthy. You know, you've really got to do some research yourself, and that research, it's Web2 research, right? There's no shortcut to, you know, figuring out whether the people involved are people you can trust, whether the wallet addresses it says there's 10 wallet addresses. Well, are they all held by the same person, or are they different people? Right. Hopefully something we can all get better at doing. All right. That does it for the Just DAO News Report. So a quick segue before we get to the featured guest interview. We have one advertisement, which is for my company, MyDAO. As a reminder, MyDAO stands for Marshall Islands DAO, and we're the company that wrote the laws in the Marshall Islands, creating a nonprofit and for-profit DAO LLC, legal entities that are made for DAOs. We have over 150 DAOs now signed up to create DAO LLCs in the Marshall Islands, or most have already created them. And we also have a network of lawyers and other professional services providers. If anyone is involved in Web3 and DAOs looking for a lawyer, or you are a lawyer, please reach out and we can help get you connected with folks that you're looking to connect with. With that out of the way, let's turn to the featured guest interview. So, Isaac, thank you for participating in the news report with me. Now that we're through that, let's just take one step back. And would you tell us a little bit about how you got into DAOs and Web3 in the first place?
Sure, yeah. So I've been involved in crypto probably since 2017. And for me, the reason the crypto captured my attention and interest is because I feel like it's the first new base tool for organizing people and resources that humanity's gotten since like pen and paper, basically. Like we now have something called smart contracts, and that can it's just like a new primary color that we can use to create more efficient systems. And so I've always been fascinated by like the ethos of Web3 and DAOs since the beginning. And so just getting involved in Web3 as kind of in retail. And then, I saw some of the same problems that others have seen in Web3, where it's like we have this great ethos for change in the world, but like how are we pragmatically going to get it done? And I remember one day, it was a Sunday, and I got a notification on my phone for the ICP Genesis launch event, where I could see like what they were building. And that's when I just realized that like whatever the future of the internet and Web3 is, it has to be so stinking similar to this that I need to get involved. And I got involved with that and built some interesting
tools. When was this ICP launch event?
2021. I think it's worth, I'll try to quickly summarize like what ICP is, just because I think that's really helpful.
Yeah, please.
Context. So it stands for Internet Computer Protocol. And it's basically a new form of cryptography and blockchain, completely different from Ethereum or anything else. We call it a Gen 3 blockchain. And basically, when it comes to cryptography, the bottom layer of security is having your own private key. Because what if that person forgets or loses their private key? That's like the bottom layer for a signature, a cryptographic signature. Above that is a multi-sig. So you can have a little bit more checks and balances, and you have multiple people who have to say yes. And that's a higher level of security. And then the third level is been around since the 90s, and it's called a threshold signature. And that's where the pieces of the secret key are in different nodes in the network, and the full secret key is never reconstructed on any node, but it's able to create valid signatures. So it's above multi-sig. And this has really only been used by militaries and governments to hold the most important, most secretive secrets in the world, where no human is going to be trusted, not even like the president, right? Now, you might ask, okay, well, why hasn't threshold cryptography gotten into crypto? Well, the problem has been because these are done on trusted private networks for like that a government agency might run or something like that. And on blockchain, you have networks where the node might be malicious or it's public, anyone can join. And so people might progressively steal the pieces of a secret over time or things like that. So nobody's gotten to figure out how to make this ultra, the most secure cryptographic signature work on a decentralized network until Definity created it. They hired, over 100 cryptographers. They have more cryptographers than any other private institution on earth. So basically only governments have more cryptographers than them. And they've worked for 8 years to develop what they call chain key technology. And it's basically the first threshold cryptography system that can work on a decentralized network securely. And it's been in operation successfully for 3 years now. And what this means at the end of the day is that a smart contract can have and use the secret key that no human or computer will ever know. And so the smart contract on ICP can directly have the secret key to a Bitcoin address and automate Bitcoin transactions as if it's an L2. Mm-hmm. But being like a decentralized autonomous user of Bitcoin, to Bitcoin's perspective, nothing has to be built. It's just a user like any other user. But on the other side, it's a centralized smart contract, and no human knows that secret key, and no computer will ever know it either. And then it can do the same thing with any chain. So with Ethereum, you can have it. In fact, for the DAO that we're going to build that I'll mention later, it might be able to pay its own registration fee to the Marshall Islands with USDC using the Ethereum network, even though it's built on ICP. And it kind of solves a lot of these challenges. So after they created Chainkey, they said, all right, well, let's go back to the drawing board. Now that we know that we can make this decentralized secret key available, how can we design a new type of network from scratch? And, long story short, ICP is a decentralized cloud. So you have a blending of private clouds all over the world that are node providers. So nothing is hosted on AWS or any big tech company, because the nodes on ICP are themselves, decentralized like node providers, like clouds, and they're just vendors for an on-chain DAO. The nodes don't really have the power. They don't hold the keys, so to speak. Only the DAO holds the keys and is able to control the network. So basically, like the node providers and the core dev teams of Definity Foundation, they don't control the network. The token holders of ICP themselves directly execute the code changes of the protocol. So like the nodes cannot hard fork even if they wanted to. They don't have that power. If anybody, the only entity that can control and change the code that ICP itself runs on is the DAO that's already built on ICP. Once when I realized that, I mean, it's basically like a new decentralized version of the internet that we've all been dreaming of, and it's able to serve websites and front ends and all of that on chain. And it's also like pitting the users in power of the actual source code. You know, like it gives DAOs teeth. Like DAOs on ICP, there's a certain type of them that have to be approved by the main DAO of the network. So the main DAO is called the NNS. It runs the whole network. And if an application wants to centralize kind of the more official way, they can become what's called an SNS DAO. I think it stands for Service Nervous System, or Definity has these weird acronyms. But long story short, basically those types of DAOs, it will not only control the source code, but it will also control all the funds raised. So nobody can steal the money. There is no admin. There's no trusted person. There's nobody with the key to the treasury. It will have to be a proposal that has certain criteria that are really strict, and everybody will see it. And the front end is also on chain. Nobody can remove a proposal from the snapshot. There's no such thing on this. Like you have, it is all hosted there, and it can't be censored and stopped. And there's no third party service providers. It is just like if the DAO chooses to do a thing, nobody can stop it.
The whole network is governed by a main DAO for ICP. Yeah. What's that DAO called? That's the NNS?
That's the NNS. It's the Network Nervous System. And you can think of it as like a network admin of last resort, or a decentralized network admin. Because if you have something as complex as a cloud, like what if somebody hosts a murder market, for example, or something terrible, some crime against humanity, immutability is not super great if you have the power of an actual like AWS. Like it's kind of scary. Like you don't really, and if you didn't have any type of mechanisms for checks and balances or like admin powers of a cloud network, you would just become a black market overnight. No company would ever be able to work with it. And it'd just be a different version of black market. The black market is decentralized. The dark web. The dark web is decentralized. Yeah, like, and this is kind of a controversial aspect of ICP. Some people are like, I want Ethereum. I would never want something where it can't be 100% no matter what, immutable. And my thinking is, well, it's different than Ethereum, and it plays a different role. Like maybe it will be good for the Uniswap front end, but the actual Uniswap stays on Ethereum. It's okay. Like we're the glue of Web3. It doesn't mean we have to be the center for everything. Maybe it holds the keys, and not even NNS can steal a key. But you know, you do need a network admin of last resort, and our network admin is a DAO. All token holders get a say, and it is a centralized DAO, and it controls the upgrades of the network and what the nodes of the network. It's permissionless to become a node, except that NNS has to accept you, and the node providers have to dox themselves. It's a whole rethinking of what a blockchain is. And yes, it doesn't make sense if you're trying to build EVM and Ethereum's model. But that has its place. Ethereum's model, I think the fees are the gas fees are a feature, not a bug. It makes certain types of bad acting not feasible. Whereas on ICP, it has a reverse gas model where basically the users don't pay the fees. There's the smart contract pays for the fees out of its own wallet that's refilled by either a DAO or the core team. And it just like, you know, we just have a different role. I feel like personally, like we complete Web3 to make all the use cases that people wished it could do be now feasible without abstracting away the complexity of that multi-chain future. Because multi-chain is great, and it just shouldn't be in front of the user. Like I shouldn't even have to really care or think too much about doing a cross-chain transaction. It should just happen, right? And the only way that can happen seamlessly without a crazy network of bridges with all their own exploits and stuff is if the smart contracts can simply have the keys themselves with no human.
Yeah.
And that's what ICP makes possible.
There's so many things about here that are blowing my mind right now. So I want to try to dig into a few of them. Just going a little bit deeper into this concept of a DAO. So of a DAO that governs the whole network. You know, some people would argue that Bitcoin and Ethereum are DAOs because even though they're not organized as organizations, you kind of vote with your actions. And so like if an Ethereum node wants to like come off the network or do a hard fork or change its software, it's kind of like voting with its feet in a sense. And I don't usually actually subscribe to that logic. I'd say they're not. They're protocols, they're networks, they're not really DAOs. You're saying that in ICP, the node operators are beholden to this one DAO made up of the token holders. So if they want to upgrade their software or change the way they do something, the whole network has to approve it. If I'm getting that right, what are the voting parameters? I mean, is it like a simple like 7-day proposal window and a 51% vote to change anything? Like, what about like issues with the tyranny of the majority and the idea that, well, what if 51% wants to kick 10% off the network? Is there any kind of protection for that?
Yeah, I mean, it's a very meaty and complex topic, the NNS, because, and I think that DAO nerds like you and me get really excited by that because we want to see more complex like intricacies. Like DAOs, I mean, they shouldn't be hard to use. And I don't think the NNS is hard to use from a user standpoint, but they do need to have some depth if they're going to do very important and key things. And so, so basically to vote on the NNS, you have to stake tokens to create what they call a neuron. And so there's something, the maximum amount you can stake is 8 years. And so there's like a whole, like a handle on Twitter and stuff called 8-year gang. And I have an 8-year neuron for example, myself, just cause I wanted to make one cause I'm a dork. But yeah, you put a staking delay in and it doesn't start the countdown. It only starts the countdown when you want to start dissolving the neuron, but it increases your voting power. So basically I have an 8-year neuron. I'm never going to start to dissolve it. And so it's going to just stay at 8 years for indefinitely. I don't plan on ever dissolving it. And, it increases my voting power and it also increases my governance earning rewards. So like I have 1,000 ICP staked for 8 years and I get every day or so, I get about one more ICP, which is worth around 15, 20 bucks. So it's not bad. And so basically everybody who's like all the voting power is based off people who have a lot of value staked for the long term. Right. So they have vested long-term interest in the network. And then we have liquid democracy. So we call them known neurons. Like I'm one of them. So people can choose to automatically follow my votes. Most people follow the votes of Definity Foundation because they created ICP. They have all of the cryptography engineers and they do the regular updates to the network. Basically, the network is self-sufficient. It doesn't need any updates, but they're adding a lot of great features like the Ethereum compatibility is not fully complete yet. It's mostly completed and there's like one area where they rely on Infura. And once they finish it, it will not even need Infura to connect to the EVM network, which is kind of mind-blowing. But anyways, so you could choose to follow like Definity Foundation, and that means that your neurons will vote following them. And there's different categories of voting. So there's really strict categories on critical votes, like updating the source code of the actual network. That's like a certain category that has some pretty strict requirements because it's very sensitive stuff. Or like if you're moving any treasury, the NNS does not manage the treasury. The SNS DAOs that raise for dApps and stuff, they have treasuries, and those are also critical proposals. And then you also just have motion proposals. So it's people just putting stuff out there, and those have a little bit less strict requirements. I think it's just like a straight 51% vote. And but yeah, they've got all kinds of interesting parameters. Like it's hard to go off of, but basically if you love DAOs, it's like there are hundreds of pages of documentation that is going to make you salivate by how awesome it is. That's why I got a really dorky and nerdy into this, because they have thought of a lot of different great checks and balances and systems and incentives.
Very interesting. Okay, cool. Well, definitely something I do want to dig into more. It's funny, every time I talk to Isaac, I'm like looking at the price of ICP and whether I should buy more. It's just for some reason, it does sound really exciting. Okay, let me ask you a little bit more about this. What'd you call is it not multi-party compute? Is that another way of describing the cryptography system, or you called it something else though?
Oh, threshold signatures?
Threshold signatures. Is that a type of multi-party compute?
I mean, and this is the area where like The actual science behind it, like I said, it was over 100 cryptographers working for 8 years. It's a 50-page white paper, and it's all very well-established science. And it's been, it's actually like just, it was popular before it even became a network. What Dfinity was inventing to create ICP was becoming really popular in the cryptography spheres, because it really is a new form of cryptography. But yeah, I mean, I'm not sure if shared compute is what makes sense, but it's like threshold signatures is a type of cryptography algorithm for creating signatures.
Fair enough. Yeah. So let's just dig into that a little bit more. So, because I think one thing you mentioned sounds really important, which is that effectively a smart contract can have a private key. And it's not obviously not actually stored on a public network, like the way that like data in a Ethereum smart contract would be, because then it wouldn't be private. But it sounds like effectively using this threshold cryptography, a smart contract, which is running on a node, can have a private key, and it could be any type of private key. So it could be a Bitcoin private key, Ethereum private key, any kind of cryptographic private key.
It has a secret nobody will ever know that it can use to sign. It's just mind-blowing. So in the way they do it, it is like you can think of the secret key is spread out among independent nodes. It's never reconstructed. And the pieces are always themselves in flux and changing. So even if somebody was trying to if the notifiers are trying to collude and they take it out, it's useless as soon as you take it out because it's already changed. So it's this like morphine, non-real thing that you can actually like cryptographically sign with, which is just freaking magic when you think about it. But
And then it sounds like the nodes that are running ICP, or you could just say ICP in general, somehow also is able to run any kind of software like front ends, it can run an Ethereum node, it sounds like pretty soon, or a Bitcoin node, and therefore interact directly with other blockchains.
Yeah, so it's actually really cool. So like the consensus algorithm, like Chainkey empowers certain things, like even in Ethereum, it has a randomizer beacon and picks nodes at random to do proposals and stuff. So like Chainkey makes a lot of great things possible. Our network is WASM based and it's asynchronous. And basically like the inputs and the outputs go through consensus, but because WASM is deterministic, the actual computation is happening not really off chain, but it's happening simultaneously across all the nodes, but it doesn't have to go through consensus, right? So it's not like you're having to stop to do consensus for every individual compute, but the input and the output is all parallelized and working on different nodes at the same time.
Okay.
So what we actually announced, and this is crazy, I didn't think it would ever be possible, but Dfinity just released a demo. They got an actual 4 billion parameter AI model working 100% on chain, which is absolutely impossible on any other network. And it I was kind of embarrassed, to be honest, on the whole AI Web3 space, because I was like, there's no way, like, unless you're running the model on chain, and that's too much compute power to do in parallel. But no, they pulled it off, and I don't know how expensive it would be, but just I think even a weak AI that's on a trustless network is still going to have really good use cases than even a strong AI on a centralized network, like depending on what you want the kind of decisions you want the AI to use, you know.
Yep.
So
okay, cool. So you've helped me understand ICP a bit more, which I really appreciate. Let's talk a little bit more about what you're working on. So what projects are you specifically working on in the ICP ecosystem?
Yeah, so I mean, as far as Cone State, we've got some internal ventures. We run a coding bootcamp, a code auditing agency, a talent agency, and an event series. And the big news is basically our event series. It's the ICPCC, ICP Community Conference. We're going to be turning that into a DAO live during its upcoming event on May 10th. Last year we had kind of a more traditional multi-day conference in Miami within a guitar-shaped skyscraper, and it was a lot of fun and it was really cool. But that was a very internal event. And most people in the greater Web3 don't know about ICP. It was invented by a bunch of nerds, and all of us who are involved in it are really nerdy, and nobody's really done, like, the marketing is the weak point, right? I think for a lot of niche crypto spaces, that's the thing. And so our event coming up is a global live stream with meetup watch parties in major cities all over the world. So it's like a big 9-hour live stream. A lot of people will meet up in different cities in Europe and watch the kickoff, and then they'll meet up in different cities in the US and watch the conclusion. And so what we're doing is, this is actually the last time that this event is going to be Code and States. We filed, and I think it'll come through soon before the end of the month, with Marshall Islands DAO LLC. And then rather than us leading the venture forward, the DAO will elect its own council, and the council will meet in a public setting, probably on like X spaces once a month, and form proposals for the DAO to vote on. And they will be delegates or like known neurons for the DAO. So people will know they can follow whatever council member they like the most. And the council members will be leading members of our ecosystem. And the DAO will basically say, here's a contract for this month's ICP to run this size of event in this area and the size of conference, you know. And, you know, Cone State or other entities might bid to be the vendor who takes on the contract. And then all of the ticket sales and sponsorships go right back to refill the treasury. So you have a self-sustaining treasury where the events and everything that is spent to benefit the ecosystem as a whole. So it's kind of like it's a community-led marketing initiative for our ecosystem that's self-sustaining. And so we're really excited about it. And it is weird because other SNS DAOs that have launched is usually the typical thing of a core team with building out a roadmap, and the DAO is more of a fundraising mechanism. And for us, we're hands off. It's no longer ours. We're giving it up. We've already given away all the IP and it's going to be given back to the DAO when the DAO exists. And so we don't own this anymore. It is literally like gone from us, and they will elect a council, and I'm going to draft up a charter, but the DAO can, and then the charter will be stored on chain on a canister on one of our smart contracts in ICP, and they can update it. And it's a living document for the DAO to decide what it wants to do, because I can't define the roadmap for it once it becomes its own independent entity. So it's going to be a really fun experiment. And the decentralization swap sale will be active on May 10th during the actual live stream itself. And there'll be a ton of airdrops from different community projects. We'll be featuring 50 plus projects of all the top stuff happening within our ecosystem, which is thriving. Our ecosystem is absolutely thriving. And we have, you said a DAO is our measure. I mean, the SNS launched and became possible for the first time around this time last year. And last year we had 14 DAOs and $22 million raised across them. And this year
ICP.
Like the SNS, the ones that have to go through the main governance DAO. And this year, I think we're already at 6. I don't know how much has been raised, but it's getting faster. There's more and more projects launching DAOs, and they're raising some serious dollars. I mean, like the smallest ones are raising $800,000 worth of ICP tokens.
So what was the genesis of Code and State, and how does that fit into ICP? Is it just an independent company that's building in the ecosystem? Is it also a DAO?
Yeah, so Cone State has two founders. They're both seasoned established VCs, and one was the COO of Definity up to Genesis, and the other one was a founding board member of Definity, and he left a little bit before Genesis to start investing in projects within the space. So, these two VCs, they were investing in different ICP projects during the bear market, and they realized that since we're not EVM based, we're kind of having to build everything from scratch, you know, like there's a lot of, it's really hard. It's already hard enough to build within Web3, much less a new NITS network trying to emerge within Web3. So they decided that a venture studio model could fill in some of the missing building blocks with internal ventures, like the ones I mentioned, like the talent agency, the code bootcamp, you know, the auditing agency and the conference. And then we also start taking on external ventures soon. And then we're give them 1 to 2 years of runway and support with legal and marketing and all that kind of stuff, and in exchange for 20% equity. And then they become independent and launch and do their own thing. And so I was employee number two. I started off as marketing lead. And then after a few months, after organizing the first ICPCC community conference, I got moved into venture lead. And I basically had the coolest and best job in the world. Bosses have started so many companies, and they say, Isaac, go start a talent agency. And I go start a talent agency. And I've started a few companies in Web3 beforehand. So I had the baseline for it. And it's been an absolute blast. I get to start Web3 companies for a living.
Nice. So it's becoming kind of an accelerator, or maybe already is to some extent.
It's basically an accelerator. Like I think the difference between us and like Consensus is that Consensus does everything 100% internally, and we want to take in external projects and then have them graduate and leave. It's not cookie cutter. It's not like we're going to take in 40 cohorts. It's not like the accelerator program where they kind of do larger batches. It's going to be more like maybe 2 or 3 projects we take on in a year, and it's a lot more bespoke and a lot more help.
Cool. Focus. Maybe more like a venture studio. I mean, I don't know why I'm trying.
It's venture studio. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Awesome. Very cool. Okay. Yeah. Really exciting. And just one more time, the date of the event is May 10th. Is that right?
Yeah, May 10th. Okay. And you can follow my handle right here at Isaac_ICP. I post about it, so you won't be able to miss it. But yeah, you'll get a chance to get like virtual and in-person attendees will get chances to get future airdrops for the Conf token. I'm going to call it the Conf token. So it's a Web3 event. You won't just be able to attend, but you can take over. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah. I think in the future, most recurring events will be DAOs, or at least they'll have a DAO component. I mean, I just feel like events are something where if you like the event enough that you go every year, you're already pretty invested in it. I mean, that's however much money, it's a lot of time. And so two things. One is, wouldn't you want to have some governance rights going forward, even if it's like helping choose the food that's going to be served, like probably even more than that, maybe speakers and other things. But also, why not share in the upside of the event? Like if you went to the event when it had 50 people, 10 years later, there's 5,000 people going every year, you should get to share in some of that upside for being early, for helping turn it into what it is. I mean, events are about the people who go. It's not just about the content. So I think it's an awesome model that will only gain popularity. Let me ask you this. When someone wants to start a DAO on ICP, is there tooling that's available to them that they can just go to like a website today, like ICP's website, and it hits a button, spin up a DAO, and now there's a platform for submitting proposals and voting and tracking the treasury and stuff like that? Or is it kind of a manual process?
No, it's actually really easy. So there's motokobootcamp.com. It's a free self-paced course to learn how to build on ICP, which is itself is almost ridiculously easy. It's like a JavaScript language. So if you've ever done any front-end coding, it's really easy to learn how to build on ICP. I'm not a great dev myself, and I was able to invent a proof of physical ownership protocol in 2 weeks. So it's really easy to build on ICP, and we have free courses for that. And when you build something on ICP, it's mutable to you by default. So you can change the code, update it, and everything like that. And then at that point, once you have something that's useful, you can choose to either black hole it forever, if it's something like a token or whatever, or you can turn it into a DAO. You don't have to use the NNS. There's other ways to do it. You can give it under the control of any other canister you want. But if you wanted to do an SNS, there's kind of like there's technical parameters and a social parameters, right? Like, because technically speaking, all it is you just submit a proposal to the main parent DAO of the whole network, and it accepts it or not. And then everything is automated, and it happens after that. The treasury creation and management, the front ends for everything. Like it's out of your hands, and the code that you submitted is no longer under your control, and you can't influence. It's just an automated process that happens, and all the baseline resources you need, like the token trackers, the token canisters, all of that is handled automatically by a DAO itself, right? Like the mother DAO, I guess you could call it, the NNS. Mm-hmm. But the social parameters are like, there's a form where everybody will expect you to post at least 2 weeks before you submit your proposal. It's like a social thing. Like if you don't post in the forum, people are like, who are you? It's very public exposing thing to like this is the DAO that runs the network. Everybody who knows about the network pays a lot of attention to the proposals on it. And so if you just come out of the woodwork and nobody's ever heard of you and you never post in that forum, you're almost definitely going to be rejected.
Rejected to even starting the new DAO, you're saying?
The SNS. Yeah, and this is a controversial thing, and I actually didn't like it at first, and I'm personally a little bit against it. I almost always vote yes, just because I don't think that it should be gated. But there are very good reasons why people think it should be gated. And the thing is, the SNS is just one mechanism. Like anybody can fork it. The code is there. They could just fork it and make your own DAO framework that uses all the same tooling. But this is kind of like I guess the name brand DAOs that are launching in front of everybody, in front of the main, like they get approved by the main DAO, like the NNS, so everybody sees it and everything like that. So there's even somebody made a really slimmed down version of the SNS that you can just deploy on your own. So you don't even need to go through that. But if you do go through that, it's pretty straightforward. Like you read a little bit of documentation, submit a proposal. That's not necessarily easy, but it's doable. And then it's all out of your hands. It all happens. All the resources, treasury management, everything of that is taken care of and automatic.
Interesting. Okay. So. Cool. Yeah. Let me see this question I like to ask all my guests. Do you have other favorite DAO tools, whether from other blockchains, from your ecosystem, or just collaboration tools? Like, do you use Discord? Do you use Telegram? Is there a new type of like Web3 wiki that you really like? Anything that you have been a fan of that you recommend people check out?
Yeah, of course. I mean, I like Gnosis Safe just because I was it was the first token I ever bought, and I was one of the earliest holders of it. So I like that project. On ICP, well, now they're multi-chain. They're ICP and Solana. It's called Discover, DSCVR, it's I think it's one of the largest, if not the largest, the decentralized social platform. It's definitely the largest on Solana now. But anyways, it started on ICP, and it's kind of like a decentralized Reddit with like DAO features built in. So like their version of a subreddit. You can like airdrop all the people in that. You can tip people with tokens, and it's a really cool decentralized social network for building communities. And I love the founder. His name's Rick Porter. He's a very incredible guy. And we have something called Open Chat. It's basically like a fully decentralized Telegram, front end, back end, all of it on chain. And they were the second SNS to ever launch, and they're a really capable team. And it's a decentralized Telegram. How cool is that? They've got community features, and they just launched. I think the only thing that's not on chain is the new feature they launched where they do video chat, but everything mm-hmm. else, like no shade against Solana. I think there's a place for every network out there, and I don't think any networks would put any other network down. But when they talk about stuff like Solmail or whatever, we actually have Dmail, which is a decentralized email server built on ICP. And so it's kind of like we're being a decentralized cloud, we fill in the gaps, right? And there's no shade on other projects that they have to have only a little bit on chain, and maybe the on chain part is just logging stuff. But I personally like it when more rather than less is under the control of a DAO and on chain. And and I like how ICP makes that possible. So those are a few projects, but we've got many more.
What about even, because I'm just so fascinated by ICP right now, even aside from favorite DAO tools, do you have another favorite like app that's been built on ICP or that's being built that you think is really cool?
Yeah, actually, one that is particularly neat, and it's called Dragons. And it's a massive, what was that, MMO, like massive online game mm-hmm. thing called? Mm-hmm. Basically, it's the founders of Neopets. So the guys who founded Neopets happen to be friends with Dominic Williams, the founder of ICP. And when the SNS was being created, they didn't want to test it out on a real application because, frankly, nothing like that had ever been done before. They didn't know if it would work because there's a lot of, as you can imagine, technical complexity in a DAO that updates its own code. And so when they launched it, they created what they called an SNS1, and it was really kind of like a test run, just a filler. Like it wasn't meant to raise much money or anything, but it was before OpenChat went. And so this existed, and people were wondering what to do with it. Like, hey, so maybe we can give it control of this application or whatever. And this guy, Adam, comes in, and he does not a hostile takeover, more like a benevolent takeover. Like he went into the market and bought 51% of control, which made this price like 300x. And so everyone's like really happy because they're just like, they paid one ICP for this thing and they're getting 600 ICP back. And he spends way more money than is in the treasury of this DAO to take it over. And then now it's become the DAO for his new game. So he changed the ticker to Dragon Karma Points, and the game's alpha is going to launch later this year. It looks really, really cool. It has like, you'll be like using things that are NFTs to craft items that are also unique NFTs that are in-game assets, and all of it's supposed to be on chain. So it's like really cool NFT mechanisms that he's going to use. The token's going to have utility, but instead of like, because he's a very wealthy guy who launched Neopets, instead of raising money to create creating a DAO by raising money from other people, he went the opposite ways and used his wealth to buy an existing DAO and hijack it. And we are all like, great, like awesome. We pass out, we get lots of money. I didn't sell all of mine, so I kept a little bit, and it's gone up bigger, more than I thought. And it's just like, it's kind of a fun story. And like I said before, if it's truly a DAO, like things should be able to break or go wrong. Like you should be able to have a hostile takeover. Like there has to be that risk, because if there's not that risk, then are you even on chain? Like, are the safety mechanisms themselves the centralized Achilles heel? You know, so yeah. I was trying to get a proposal to pass with another DAO recently to sponsor the conference, and it got rejected because somebody trolled it, and he got the voting power to troll it. And even though the core team was for it and I was for it, it got rejected. And I was like, you know what? Like, more power to you. That means that you're that you're really autonomous. Like, nobody could control you. So I didn't take it personally. I didn't take it negatively. I'm like, this if anything, this proves the robustness of what DAOs and ICP are able to do.
What DAO was that? This was a like ICP DAO or?
Yeah, it's one of the other SNS. It's called Sneed DAO, and it's a meme token that is basically like one of the cool things that our DAOs are able to do is that like they can become the owners of other things that are built. So the team is just building cool things like liquidity locks. So if you're launching a token on ICP that's a meme token, you can provably give ownership of it to Sneed DAO. They get to have the swap trading fees for their DAO members as governance, but it's unruggable because it would take a proposal that takes 4 days to pass and to rug it. If the DAO did want to rug it, so everyone would have time to take the liquidity out. So basically, you're making your liquidity for your token provably unruggable by giving ownership to Sneed, and that's one of their mechanisms. They're also going to launch a brand new token during the conference called Alien. And the cool thing there is because the DAO itself is the entity that's launching this meme token, the DAO will be supplying the liquidity for it. 45% of the supply will be given out during the conference, and there's no whales at all. There's no team allocations. There's no influencer allocations. Like, from day one, it's even marketing for everybody, right? It's just, you know, like that's kind of cool. Like, it kind of blows my mind. I feel like meme tokens almost need to like get rid of the original core team before people trust them. Like when the guy with Doge sold all his Doge, that's when Doge took off because people knew that the community could truly take ownership of it. So this, you know, having a DAO launch a meme token, I don't know. I've never heard of it happening before, but I think that proposal for the DAO to do that just passed today. I need to check, but yeah, it's cool stuff.
What's that token called?
It's going to be called Alien. If they do it, Alien. It's going to be called Alien. Okay. And all I did was I knew the core team. So I gave them the idea and they're like, oh, I love this idea. And so they did it and it's going to be its own thing, right? The only one responsible for launching it is the DAO itself if it happens.
Yeah. Yeah. Just going back to what you said about kind of it, you know, finding that a DAO is truly a DAO because something that otherwise might be considered bad can happen, right? Like someone makes a proposal fail that probably should pass, or they're able to do a governance attack or hostile takeover or something. I think there are also, you know, nuanced models of DAOs that can help prevent those kinds of things if that's what you want and still be a DAO. I think there's probably a spectrum, right? I mean, I'm thinking about, for example, nouns-ish DAOs on the Ethereum ecosystem, where you usually have some address has a veto right, and it starts out as one person, which certainly does not sound very much like a DAO. But when you have like two or three members, maybe it's important to make sure you can't have just two of those people run away with the DAO's money. And so instead you trust one person. And then when you're big enough, you hand over that veto right to three people, then five people, and then maybe seven or nine or 11 people. And so it's kind of like having like two layers where you have like the DAO, and then you have this like almost like security council. And admittedly, even if as I say it, I mean, certainly it's less decentralized than actually giving everyone voting rights. But I think for some circumstances, like a lot of nouns-ish DAOs where they want to make sure the DAO stays on mission throughout its life and that no one can, you know, divert the treasury or divert the purpose in a different direction, maybe that's a balanced way of doing things.
Yeah. And I think I agree with you. Like, I think that a DAO should have a very specific scope because it's essentially mob decisions. And that might not be the best use case for every type of business model or like project, right? And there's different ways to do that. I mean, my one criticism of the SNS, as cool as it is, it's very opinionated. And what I personally would love to see is people using ICP technology to make open source different weird DAO things that don't exist yet, because it can do things on other chains. So it could control an Ethereum dApp or it can control Bitcoin wallets. Like, I want to see people making different types of DAO models possible. And I think that now that we have a way to decentralize secret keys, we can actually give those new models teeth, even if part of it is on Web2 or what have you. I mean, I think, like, I play with a thought experiment sometimes of like, take Samsung. we couldn't decentralize Samsung. Like I don't think a mob is the best entity for making a decision about where to pit a factory for silicon manufacturing, right? Like, I don't think that normal people really, like, it's okay for there to be experts who make those decisions, but what if it was just a DAO holding them accountable? So like the board members of these big companies, like if it gets found out that, yeah, we give them the right to make decisions, but they're using child slave labor in this random country to make silicon manufacture, whatever, they should be held accountable. People should get fired for doing bad stuff. People should be able to not hide their decisions and not entrench their power. So what if we don't have to redesign the whole like board members and org structure that works and gets things done? We just augment it with the missing transparency and accountability using a DAO, like accountability DAO is what I'm calling this. I want to write a paper on it soon. But like that's the kind of creative thinking that you could actually literally block someone out or like burn their like funds that they had staked or whatever, like do something really truly powerful with ICP tech making those kinds of DAOs.
Well, I talk about this a lot too with a lot of people who've been in the DAO space for a while, which is I think the early DAOs said, we're going to throw out all of the old ways of doing things and just do things as like total direct democracy, vote on everything, 51% vote, you know, one token, one vote, whatever. And we've learned that really what's going to work best is some combination of the old and the new. So maybe you do need a board, but maybe it's liquid democracy instead of voting once a year, right? And maybe there's, to your point, DAOs introduce almost complete transparency. And so now the board can't do a bunch of stuff in secret in between getting elected and the next election. Maybe you can have a vote anytime to remove one of them. And even just the fact that, you know, thanks to tokens, it's just so much less expensive and easier to distribute governance rights and ownership rights much more widely than you can even do with a traditional shareholder corporation. I mean, I like to use the example, like if Starbucks wanted to give 1/10 of one share of their stock to every single person who walked in the door, they physically cannot do it. The infrastructure does not exist. Those people need brokerage accounts. You'd have to fill out a bunch of forms. I mean, it would take hours for every single person that you want to give like 5 cents of Starbucks stock. And leaving aside whether or not Starbucks would want to do that, although I have a feeling maybe they would if they could. I mean, certainly that's what's happening with most Web3 projects, is they're saying we want ownership to be distributed much more widely. And there's massive benefits to that in terms of engaging your community, incentivizing them, et cetera. Even just making better decisions. And so now that there is a way that you literally could give 0.5 cents of your stock or equivalent, you know, token to every single person that uses your product, that's incredible, right? And that means that so many more people have sway over who's on the board. And so even if there's still a board, like that's still so much better.
I think so too. And like you said, like the models that Web3 first created, it was good for like MakerDAO, where you have like an interest rate to set, you know, and that's, you know, like it's very specific technical function that with strong financial incentives. But yeah, I agree. Like complex things, we're gonna need to innovate. I get excited whenever I see somebody trying something with a DAO I've never seen before, and disappointed when I see too much of the same old. This needs to be like a science. Like I want to someday see people who are not political scientists, but they're like there'd be some new word. I don't even know what it would be yet, where they're basically a scientist of governance using on-chain mechanisms, where it's its own discipline with different types of, like research studies done and mechanisms built. Like we need to start getting formal and serious about exploring the space, because I do believe that in the future, a lot of assets and resources and organizations and people will be automated by smart contracts. And the plus side, we could literally unlock swarm intelligence and humanity for the first time ever and create efficiencies no one's ever seen before. Or we could also create like terrible, like entrenched inefficient systems nobody can replace, like kind of like a stupid dictator that's just stuck in the center of everything that has to go through. Like that doesn't sound ideal, but that could actually happen, right? So I want to see this thought of more as like a science and discipline rather than just a fad.
Totally. And I think there are more and more academics that are recognizing that what's happening in the world of Web3 and DAOs is worth studying and getting involved in. And there's things like Talent DAO, If you've never seen it, as a woman named Lisa Walken is a great example. She just published a paper with like 30 other people or more on token engineering. She's done one on DAO leadership. And these are academic level research where they're going out, interviewing the people, doing the work, comparing it to historical research on leadership and governance and business, organizational theory, organizational psychology, all this stuff. And I think it's incredibly valuable. I mean, I think one of the kind of challenges we face as an industry is we're still very engineer heavy, right? Which is awesome.
Yeah.
most places are engineer light and we could really use more engineers. But a lot of engineers, they didn't necessarily go to business school, which is fine. But like there is some value in having the business school people around too. Mm-hmm. And I think increasingly we are getting that, but we certainly need more of it.
Yeah, no, 100% agree. And I'm going to look into Talent DAO too. Actually, I'd seen them on your channel before. So I want to go back and watch that episode as well.
Cool. As we get close to the end of the episode, I just want to ask you a couple more questions. So sure. Just for, again, people that are new to the world of DAOs or they're starting a DAO today, I mean, do you have one other piece of advice for someone who's starting a DAO? What is something that's really important for them to think about?
Yeah, I think that there's two things I would say is make sure that your DAO has teeth, like that if you aren't really a little bit worried about something, you're not really giving something up, like then you're really creating a DAO, right? Like there should be a little, not to say that I want to see things go wrong or whatever, but I think you should ask yourself, why would anybody participate in this? Like, what does this truly give them control over?
As opposed to keeping control as a founder.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It has to be an actual shift in your operations. And then the second thing is like I'm a big fan of having a charter or representative statement. Like this is what we as a collective group of members think that we should do. And like you want a DAO that has focus. And especially in a space like ICP where a DAO can kind of a little bit do anything, that has led to stall outs. So like SNS1 before it was taken over by the Dragons guy, it was kind of stalled. It didn't really do much, but you need to have kind of like, this is what we do, really clearly defined. And it's okay if the DAO changes, if it needs to have it. And I think the last thing is kind of what you and I just talked about, which is like, try something weird and be experimental. Like don't do the same cookie cutter stuff. Don't try to fit it into the common definition. Like let's try to further this industry. I know that I just hate to see people tacking on DAO as a marketing tactic. And I know that happens. And I guess that's, in scheme of capitalism, that there's nothing inherently wrong with that. But I mean, maybe I'm an idealist, but I think that we're all in Web3 as part of a peaceful revolution to make a fairer and better world. And so try to think about how you're going to contribute to that beyond just executing a DAO for the sake of calling it that. What thoughts can you add in it? Maybe solving the problems that we've seen in other DAOs, like spend time watching podcasts like this and reading about the pitfalls of other DAOs and kind of see what you can add to the conversation in the space to move it forward. If those three things of having a charter, being innovative, and making sure you've got teeth on what you build, I think that would be a good place to start. And use ICP because it's the best.
There you go. Nice. I got to say, though, I think it's one of the really challenging things about starting a DAO compared to a traditional company is like if you're starting a traditional company and you ask for advice about how should I run this company, they'd probably say, well, just do it the same way everyone does it so that you don't have to worry about that, right? Just like find the lawyer who does startups and let him just like structure everything for you. And that way you can focus on building the product. I think one of the challenges of starting DAOs today is that you are building a product and you're trying to figure out how to start and lead a DAO. And I think that's really challenging in a world where DAOs are so new. So I'd say for some people, maybe just go find like a DAO model you've seen other people use and just copy it and like focus on building the product if that's really the priority. But the reality is because DAOs are so new, most of us who are starting DAOs are experimenting. We are trying new things.
Yeah.
And we are learning as we go and solving two problems at once, right? One is how to build your product. Two is how to build a DAO.
Exactly. And you know, Web3 as an industry is still trying to find its real world use case, and that's just the truth of it, right? It's hard to know which model to copy when, let's be honest, how many dApps out there are actually self-sustaining and profitable long term? We don't even know the answer to that because our industry is so new. But I would love to kind of see things like, I don't think that it's going to be like a tool, like take, like take the industry for insurance. Like I think I'm pretty sure I'm not alone when I say that I generally don't like that industry. I think most of the insurance companies out there are kind of scammy and nobody really enjoys it, but you have to deal with it, right? Like it's an annoying thing. I don't think these insurance companies out of the goodness of their heart are going to further decentralize just for the sake of it, right? They don't care. They're fleecing people and they love it and they're happy. Somebody needs to go in there with a Web3 mindset and be like, hey, everybody, here's an insurance company that is definitely not hurting people and like doing its part and being a fair actor. And you can know because of complicated cryptography. You don't have to know what the cryptography is. There's other people who do and you can trust. But at the end of the day, it's cheaper and it's safer. And, you know, we're not screwing you over. You know, it's safe to use. And they just start dominating in the market so much better because they're just a legitimately better alternative that other insurance companies are forced to stay relevant. They have to begrudgingly adopt decentralization in Web3. Like that's how I think that it would happen, right? So yeah, I mean, like it's gonna take those people. Like you said, don't be afraid to apply cookie cutter solution if that's right for you. I would say that applies, but also don't be afraid to go into Web2, and maybe do something that's happening in Web2 that is cash flow positive. And do you know the most successful and profitable business in the U.S. right now is laundromats? Like what? The boring businesses, yeah, like 98% of laundromats that start like succeed after 2 or 3 years, and that's the highest success rate that out of any type of business out there, right? Like I would love to see Web3 getting into boring stuff that just makes their cash cows, like a boring cash cow, and you make a decentralized version that's just a little bit more efficient and effective against the competition. That's how we as an industry get beyond the casino money. There's nothing wrong with the casino money, nothing wrong with VCs, but we need to mature past that to where we're a dominant actual force in the global economy, where people are using Web3 without even realizing it. They're going, you know, like they spend money in a laundromat and a DAO gets the income. How crazy would that be?
Yeah. Can I have my water on Web3 somehow rather than?
Yeah. You know, I think there's a project like that. It's all kinds of stuff.
All right. Man. Well, that's a really good note to close on. But before we do, where can people find you and your projects on the web or on social?
Yeah, sure. Just you can follow me on X. That's where I'm most active. It's Isaac, ISAAC _ICP. Our event coming up is going to showcase everything I'm building, but everything the ecosystem is building most importantly. And it's going to be I think it's going to be huge. And that's, you can attend it completely free and it's virtual and you get free stuff the entire time you watch it. So there's no reason not to join. And it's going to be like pretty much, you know, 9 hours on May 10th. So you should have flexibility. Anybody should be able to join it, get some free stuff, learn about the cool things that ICP does. And that's icp-cc.com. But I'll also be posting a lot about it on X.
Awesome. And you can find me on Farcaster is my favorite place at the Thriller, or MyDAO is at MyDAO, MIDAO. MyDAO is at MyDAO.org. Just another quick ad for MyDAO. We do legal entities for DAOs and Web3. We also have a partner network of lawyers and tax advisors and others all over the world who can help you with your DAO. Please reach out and I can introduce you to them. Again, Isaac, thanks so much for coming on the show. Really appreciate it.
All right. It's been a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Yep. Quick disclaimer. None of this is ever legal or tax advice or any other kind of financial advice. We're not lawyers. And a final note to the audience. Are you thinking about starting a DAO? Just DAO it.